Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 10th of March, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in studio, Mike Robinson. Well, we're delighted we're going to be joined today by David Scott with Northern Exposure, reporting on matters north of the border. And we've got a special guest alongside David, and that's Abby Reardon. And she is chair of the Ardersia Foundation. And we're going to be covering a really exciting local news story, which is about local people taking on developers and winning. So we've often had these calls for good news. And I'm pleased to say that following on from Ian Crane's success in the court, which we were talking about yesterday, we've got another example of good people coming together to support each other and take on what is, what do we call it, bullying by the state, maybe. Over to you, Mike.
Yes, before we talk about that, well, here's one of the main bullies, I guess. Theresa May, European Council meeting taking place yesterday. It's still on today, but she isn't attending today. She said at the end of her closing comments, basically to the press, "At this summit, we've shown once again how Britain will continue to play a leading role in Europe long after we've left the EU." But that's easy, Brian. It's because we're not leaving the EU.
No question of that, Mike. Right. It's getting easier and easier to see what's going on.
In particular, through our contribution to the challenge of managing mass migration, we'll be talking about that in a minute when we discuss Europol, through our leadership in tackling organised crime and instability in the Western Balkans, and through the new and equal partnership that we want to build between the EU and an independent, self-governing global Britain. So that's good. As I have argued, that's she, we have managed, controlled, and truly, we need a managed, controlled and truly global approach. And that's exactly what the council agreed. So we'll also mention this global approach in a second as well. And then she said, turning to Brexit, our European partners have made it clear to me that they want to get on with the negotiations. So do I. It's time to get on with leaving the European Union, building the independent, self-governing global Britain the British people have called for. Again, I wasn't aware that the British people realised that that's what they were calling for.
Well, they haven't. We haven't, Mike. What's just happening is the government invents an agenda. It then says this is our agenda and we're going to deliver it for you.
Absolutely. Now, to clarify, of course, most people were expecting an independent, self-governing Britain. But the global aspect, there's something else going on there. Again, we're going to come on to that in a second. And she said, so as I've said, we will trigger Article 50 by the end of the month. This will be a defining moment for the UK as we begin the process of forging a new role for ourselves in the world. And as the Chancellor made clear yesterday, we will use this moment of change to build a stronger economy and a fairer society that works for ordinary working people by embracing genuine economic and social reform here at home. So again, we're taking opportunity of this moment of change to drive social reform here at home. So there
whether
we
want it or not.
Whether we want it or not. And of course, we're not told exactly what that social reform is or what form it's going to take. Well, towards the end of this sort of question and answer session, she was asked by the press, the Danish foreign minister said that a post-Brexit trade deal would take up to 15 years. Is he wrong? She said, well, first of all, obviously, the treaty sets out when the country is leaving the EU, and that process, which is Article 50, sets out for the withdrawal, but also setting up the framework for the future relationship, actually should take the 2 years. And that's the timetable we're working to, and that's the timetable the EU is working to. Yes, I'm optimistic that we can achieve a good and comprehensive free trade deal with the EU. So free trade deals right at the heart of this, as usual. Well, here we go, because at the same time, in Lancaster House, where other nasty deals by government have been done, the Commonwealth was meeting with Liam Fox, TTP on steroids is what I've labelled this. This was the inaugural Commonwealth Trade Ministers meeting taking place at Lancaster House yesterday and today. And this is in advance of the 2018 Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which is also being held in the UK. And the objective, they say, was to reaffirm the commitment of Commonwealth member countries to a transparent, free and fair multilateral trading system and to define an ambitious Commonwealth-led agenda for growth to promote trade, investment and so on. And it all sounds very good, but the question is, what's the cost? The ministers' meeting discussed areas where the Commonwealth can work together to strengthen trade and they had a particular focus on exploring the Commonwealth factor.
It's quite uncanny what's happened today, Mike, because we're going to be able to follow this on beautifully with some information that somebody found locally. So just one local find is going to take us right back into the subject of the Commonwealth and what is really going on here.
Absolutely. So here's what Liam Fox had to say. It is the government's intention to make Britain a leader in free trade, working with our friends and allies in the Commonwealth to remove barriers and liberalise the global trading environment. And it's that word liberalise that's important, I think. But what fascinates me, and I'm going to ask David for comment in a second on this, because almost no one is recognising the threat of Britain's trade policy here. We have one or two articles about TTIP still in the press. This one, TTIP on ice, but trade policy hotter than ever. But no one is really recognising what Britain is up to here. These trade agreements that Britain wants to create with the world under this mantra of hashtag global Britain are going to contain the same problems that TTIP, TPP, TISA and CETA have. The other issue about the Commonwealth, of course, is that it is being used to drive through so much globalist policy. And in fact, we've been highlighting this for years, this article from 2012, Multiple Paths Lead to One World Government. Just a quick quote out of this, a hint came in July 2010 when the Queen addressed the UN General Assembly. She said, "This September, leaders will meet to agree how to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, which each nation will have its own distinctive contribution to make. Since I addressed you last, the Commonwealth too has grown vigorously to become a group of nations representing nearly 2 billion people. It gives its wholehearted support to the significant contributions to peace and stability of the world made by the United Nations and its agencies. Last November, when I opened the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Trinidad and Tobago, I told the delegates that the Commonwealth had the opportunity to lead. Today, I offer you the same message." So the implications of that are that the British monarch is telling the world that she's creating the largest power bloc within the United Nations, a power bloc of 54 votes compared to a single vote of, say, the United States, Russia or China. The conclusion of this article, I'm just going to read it verbatim. Martin Edwards saying, "Our research has led us to conclude that the Commonwealth is well on its way to becoming the key power bloc leading us towards world government via the United Nations. It would appear that the question is not whether one or the other will take us there, since both are. As for who's pushing the agenda, so far all paths lead us back to the British Crown." So, David, nobody really recognising the danger of the free trade agreements and the Commonwealth. I mean, what's your thoughts on what I've just discussed?
I find a lot of these areas quite difficult, partly because the language used is strange and words have meanings which you might not expect. the summary of free trade is to be transparent. Transparent, free and fair. Trade should be transparent, free and fair. Well, if you actually have free trade, it's not a matter of transparency. It just is. In fact, the regulations, the restrictions are not there. It's not that they're transparent. It's not that you know what they are. They do not exist. Free means people can make any agreements to trade with one another that they wish. And fair doesn't come into it, because if it's voluntary, both parties benefit. So the idea of fairness, and there's a UK column article which is excellent on this subject, the idea of fairness is an idea of social manipulation and social engineering. It's nothing to do with trade, because the thing that regulates trade is the freeness, is the competition. So, yes, it's you're seeing another agenda being very carefully placed in. And when you then have things like the restriction provided by governmental regulation, that tends to operate very much in the interest of the large companies, the existing players. They push it. They very often write the legislation, if you go back far enough, and it tends to operate against new startups, innovation, new ideas, and the small firm. And therefore, it tends to operate as an anti-competitive issue. And that brings in problems, and the problems are then answered by more regulation. And so we go round. So this seems to be the path that's being followed here. It's not towards smaller government and liberty. It's towards a more well-connected and internationalised system akin to the one we thought we were leaving.
I think I agree with everything you've said there, but I want to come back to this point. Why is nobody recognizing the danger of this? Because when TTIP and TPP and CETA and TISA were all announced, all the usual suspects were up with their placards shouting and screaming about the dangers of this. Now, I suggested that with Britain creating these smaller bilateral trade deals, that these trade deals may be falling under the radar. And that seems to be what's happening. The question is, why is nobody recognizing the danger of this?
That's a good question. I don't think I have a very succinct answer to that one. And again, there are so many contradictions here, because you have to remember that for all of the problems of the so-called free trade or the increase in international trade that goes under the name globalization, and there's many dangers under that tag, we have seen a huge reduction in the number of people living in absolute poverty across the world. Trade does actually work. But there is something else being brought in along with it, being masked underneath the benefits that are accruing from free trade. In terms of why are people going to sleep on it, I think that speaks to the larger sort of wing of politics. There's a wing of politics that views big business and big government with suspicion, and there's a wing that views certainly big government as being entirely a good thing, and they tend to go to sleep when that agenda's been pushed.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that, David. I'll just come in here and say that it was several years ago that Mike Robinson and myself saw a document which was actually on the Scottish Parliament website. And that document surprised us because it was talking very enthusiastically about the Commonwealth. But when we read through it, it more or less intimated was the best route for the next step of the sort of world political agenda to come through the European Union or the Commonwealth. And that, at the time, it was an interesting document, but it was one I remember. I wish I had it now, because let's follow through where we've started with this one. And a local viewer went to look on the Tynmouth Facebook page. And what did they see? A very interesting flyer for Fly the Flag for the Commonwealth. So let's bring it in here. So we've got 13th of March 2017, Fly a Flag for the Commonwealth, uniting a family of nations in common purpose and understanding around the world. And so here it is being taken on in one local location. But as we're about to see, this is actually quite a massive agenda. So you're invited to join the Deputy Town Mayor, Councillor Paul Burgess, and councillors to the raising of the Commonwealth flag. Well, what is all this about? We took a quick look at the website, and we'd certainly encourage other people to have a look. And to continue the Scottish theme, we've got
Baroness Scotland.
Thank you, Mike. And what is being said here? Now, these are not actually her words. They're words that have been taken from the documentation around this. But it says, now is the perfect time to celebrate the true value of the Commonwealth as an increasingly multicultural world seeks unity, understanding and tolerance. So I found that quite fascinating, that somebody thinks all of a sudden now is the right time to be driving towards the Commonwealth agenda. Could it be that we've got the claim of Brexit, so the European Union hasn't quite worked, we're now going to switch the public mind to the Commonwealth?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what's happening. But who was the man, Bruno Peake, behind this website? Well, here he is. You've just got to go and have a look at this, because this astonishing man has been working on major events. He's the pageantry master. He's been doing this for 30 years. He says that he was adopted very early on and then brought up by foster parents. He's of Polish origin, but he seems to be arranging every major event in the country there is. I'd never heard of him before. I'm fascinated in him. I'm fascinated in everything about him, because I'd like to know who he really is. So do have a read of that page, which has got quite a lot of detail about him. Well, we could bring in this bit because I found it fascinating that if we go back to 1992, we had, Beacon Europe, not Beacon Commonwealth or Raise the Flag for the Commonwealth. We had Beacon Europe, European Unity Celebrations. So he did a really good job there, celebrating the unity of the European Union. And now that hasn't worked. Now he's hard at work on celebrating the Commonwealth. So let's refocus and reframe the public into the next, and I'm calling it SCAM, which is uniting the world via common purpose and the Commonwealth. So here's a bit more. This is the charter signed by the Queen herself. But if you actually look through what it's talking about, world unity, inclusiveness, law and order, common purpose, children, always a popular topic. And this is linking in with what you mentioned, because when we talk about the power of the Commonwealth, they're boasting here of 2.5 billion people and the interconnected network. So this is very much seen as a power base. And if you have a look at some more of the detail, this made me highly suspicious, because we're back into the same old thing. Our aim for 2017 is to engage with our young people, the future of the Commonwealth, through schools and youth organisations. And it was only yesterday, Mike, we were talking about big society capturing the minds of the youngsters in UK. Well, this was a picture on the gentleman's website, caught my eye. And of course, here we've got upstanding figures, the role model for our children, Elton John, whoever he is. But actually, that wasn't the real problem with this little gathering, because over here I spotted a gentleman I recognised, and it was none other than convicted child abuser Rolf Harris. So this is the these are the type of people that this organisation is pushing for our children to follow, in particular to get them locked into this Commonwealth plan.
Yep.
So what's coming here? I think this is the rules-based international order, the new name for the new world order, or the one world system of government. And of course, I'll just end this section on this note, which is the Plymouth Herald saying that wolves are about to be reintroduced into the wild. Now, if you read the article, that's not quite true, because basically what's happening here is that wolves are going into a park. But basically, the real rewilding of the country is all to do with Agenda 21. And that takes us back into the drive for this one world system of government.
Absolutely.
Apologies for a little bit of text, which shouldn't be in that one. So I think we're well on the way to this rules-based international order, Mike. And it seems the Commonwealth is the primary route, with the European Union simply pushed to one side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right, David. Let's get on to some Scottish issues then. Jim Sillars, I won't back independence if Scotland rejoins the EU.
Yes, a significant moment this. This is Jim Sillars, firebrand of the SNP and memorably winner of a seat in government in a by-election when Scotland's political scene was dominated by the Labour Party, and we had 50 Labour MPs. And then all of a sudden it was 49. And so he's an elder statesman of the SNP, of the Nationalist Movement of Scotland. And he is not buying the independence within Europe offering here that's coming from Nicola Sturgeon's SNP. So much so that he says if that's what's on offer, he will abstain in any future independence referendum. And this article points out that some 400,000 SNP supporters voted to leave the EU, including some MSPs. So the idea that there is a united party-wide, let alone nationwide, view in Scotland that we are pro-EU is far from the truth.
Okay, and you've published a new article on the column, Red Coats and Red Herrings.
Yes, this is covering, this was inspired rather by an exchange in Holyrood, where Murdo Fraser, Conservative MSP, raised an issue with First Minister Nicola Sturgeon regarding some statements from a Perth and Kinross councillor and deputy leader of the council in my own area here, which made references to red coats and coffins, and was suggested that this was in fact anti-English. And my article analyses what's really underlying this, and it's far more than the narrow anti-Englishness. And I rather acquit the SNP, although not all of its support, on that charge, but highlight that what they're really about is international socialism, and they're not in fact a national party at all, and that these inconsistencies are coming more and more to the fore.
Okay, and then let's move on to some good news, because this, from the headlines at least, looks as if some progress is being made on the named person scheme.
Well, yes, you would think so, but the headlines are a little a little confusing in places, because the presentation and the speech by John Swinney in Parliament this week was extremely confusing. Now, this is the Telegraph. SNP forced to gut powers of state guardians after Supreme Court defeat. Now, if that is accurate, if that is an accurate analysis of what John Swinney actually said, that's tremendously good news, and it shows a further victory for the named person, not a named person campaign, which was political campaign of the year last year in Scotland, and a return to the condition before this legislation was suggested, whereby sharing of confidential information about children without the consent of the parents only is possible where there's a risk of significant harm to the child. Now, as opposed to a well-being concern, which can mean absolutely anything, a gut feel, a worry about anything at all. If that's the case, that would be very good. But simultaneously, Mr. Swinney is saying that current practice complies with the law. Now, we know that current practice is stomping all over the law. This next one here is another headline that shows... puts it a little more quietly than the Scotsman here. John Swinney puts named person plans on hold for the second time. This is perfectly accurate. Everything's been pushed back. There'll be a new bill because the old bill was deemed unlawful. There'll be a new bill that will be put forward just before the summer recess, and that will be then debated through Parliament and won't come into effect until 2018. So it's certainly been pushed back, and the resistance to it is certainly working. Whether the bill will actually address the concerns of the Not a Named Person campaign, of the people in Scotland who detest this idea, and of the Supreme Court, remains to be seen, because there are so many inconsistencies in what Mr. Swinney's saying. He says, for example, that well-being is defined, and the Supreme Court says well-being is not defined. And since everything to do with the named person considers well-being, and promoting well-being as the basic function of the named person, if you cannot define it, then it's impossible to know what it is.
And your good lady wife has managed to get an article published in the Scottish Third Sector sort of main publication.
Yes, there was a article in this publication that was rather accepting of Mr. Swinney's position in this, so she quickly submitted a counter argument. And this was published, and I encourage people to go and have a look at this. I don't know if you've got the quote that I highlighted in that.
I don't.
If I can quickly find it on air live here, this might not go well. Over the last few years, many families in Scotland have had to face the grave consequences of the conflation of these two terms, which is welfare and well-being, as the GERFEC machinery mobilised against them over practitioners' gut feelings and other subjective judgments. And she also said, I'm not going to spot it just live on air, I'm sorry about that. There was one particular quote that rather summed it up.
Oh, okay, but for anybody that wants to go and look for that, the headline is Named Person Swinney Must Think Again as the Fight Goes On. We can have a look for that, but you have an article about to be published. It's not just published yet, but later on today, early tomorrow, this will be published. Enigma is the headline. Enigma deciphering John Swinney.
Yes, the analogy I'm making here is that the Enigma code machine of Wehrmacht fame had one fundamental flaw in it. In that if you pressed a given letter, it never returned that same letter. So you never got back what you actually were trying to encode. It was always something different. And this is rather the nature of Mr. Sweeney's explanation for the named person. What we're getting back is never the reality. It's never the honest, plain truth of the situation. It is some variation of spin or of deception. And as a result, confidence is not there and cannot be rebuilt.
Okay, and this document, Child Protection, this is a practitioner's guide from Perth and Kinross, I believe.
Yes, if people were interested in what's actually happening on the ground, there's a Perth and Kinross website. In fact, we'll put the link up to this. We'll add it into that article. There's a Perth and Kinross website that details all of their documents that cover how practitioners are meant to interact with the named person scheme, how they're meant to share information, and on what basis they're meant to share information. And it's very interesting. A, it shows that a complete lack of respect for the UK Supreme Court decision. It shows in places information being shared on merely a whim. It also shows that the 2016 and 2017 guidance are very substantially different. There's conflicts all over it, and confusion reigns. The right-hand illustration here is the consent flow chart. So this asks practitioners one question. Are you worried or concerned about a child or young person's well-being? If the answer is yes, it says, do I need to consent to share information? No, share the information. So all you need is a worry or concern about well-being, and you can share any information that you see fit if you're in the government. Now, a worry or concern is an emotional reaction. It doesn't, nowhere does it mention facts, nowhere does it mention evidence. Well-being is undefined and undefinable construct that means different things to different people. And we're talking here from the very outset about you, so it's a subjective view. So if you have a subjective emotional response about anything at all, you can share information about the Children of Scotland. That was ruled unlawful by the UK Supreme Court very explicitly, and yet it's still on Perth and Kinross Council's website, it's still official policy, and it's been rolled out on the ground, whatever Mr. Sweeney might say to the contrary.
Yes. Well, the Supreme Court has issued another ruling. This time the ruling was given on the 1st of March 2017. The hearing was in January. And this is in the matter of a Scottish child. Give us the background to this.
Well, this was a child taken at birth. Both parents had learning difficulties. And the mother had two children by a previous relationship taken into care before. And this went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court found very, very strongly in favour of the parents and very strongly against the conduct, not only of West Lothian Council, the council concerned, but very specifically the conduct of the Scottish courts in this matter. And it brought out two very important aspects that are going to be the subject of short articles in the column. The first one is the description of what a social worker is. And Lady Hale goes on to describe the role of the social worker as being analogous to a detective or a policeman to gather evidence against the family and present it before the court. So when you're dealing with a social worker, that is what they are doing, and that's what has to be remembered at all times. People think there is somehow a friend sent by the state to operate in the family's best interest. That's simply not the case. The other aspect, and one which was key to this finding, was the criteria, the threshold being set for the state taking a child from its parents. And what was coming out loud and clear from that judgment is that the legal and lawful threshold is not being properly applied by the courts. And the UK Supreme Courts are saying very loudly that the family courts, the care courts throughout the country need to start listening to this and need to change their policy.
David, thank you very much for taking us through that. I'll just add that over the last 24 hours, I've had another three cases, people coming to me with cases of children taken from them by children's services, horrific cases, lies, falsification of evidence, court hearings that were clearly rigged. It's the same pattern. Two ladies several children in both cases, but also one gentleman. So we are seeing more and more of these cases, and it's becoming obvious that something is deeply wrong inside the very organisations that say they're there to protect children. Well, let's move on to the subject of water, and it's Scottish water that is at the heart of this next section. We've seen in England on many occasions the water authorities can be really draconian, in some cases bullying, as they attempt to get projects through. But I think this project up in Scotland has got some very interesting points to it. So if I just set the scene, and David, I'll get you to come in on this, obviously. But what's the location for this story? Well, it's Ardersier, which is up by the Moray Firth. This is near Inverness in Scotland. Beautiful day, as always the case. And this lady we're going to be talking to in just a moment, this is Abby Reardon. Now, she's working with other local people, and they've been challenging what's been happening by Scottish Water and the local authority, and they formed, as we can see here, the Ardersier Foundation. So if you want to know exactly where this is, here's a quick map. You can see Inverness down at the bottom of the Moray Firth and Ardersier there just up at the top right. And the whole thing stems around a new housing development which is being planned. I understand this is the artist's impression. And work has already got underway, which is causing chaos and consternation. David, I'll bring you in here if I may. Just take us through what the development's about, and I've got some more images we can bring up on screen. Perhaps I'll do that first, actually, and then you'll be able to explain it more. So on this map down at the bottom, we've got the new development, and that requires wastewater discharge. And we've got a number of features connected with this. So we've got various sewage outlet pipes. We've got a sea outlet up here, but the yellow is the main path of the pipeline. And this is the root of the problem that the Scottish Water claims this has sort of all been organised. The environmental studies have gone through, but it appears that this is not the case.
Yes, so we have a very large development, a new village, almost a new town, as an outlier, a satellite to Inverness, which is Inverness is growing very rapidly. The council is fully behind this development, and the wastewater treatment works to serve this are utilising an existing much smaller facility at Ardersier. The community in Ardersier thought this was an inappropriate site, resisted it very strongly. These objections were not did not prevail, and the scheme was granted planning consent. The planning consent was about to time out, and it was extended, and then the extension was also about to time out, and work started on the very last day it was possible to start, in a tremendous rush in order to avoid having to go back and revisit the planning consent here. And then we've been involved in a small way in assisting one or two people in Ardersier to ask the right questions. And what we're finding is with the council being wholeheartedly behind the development, their role as honest broker, as the referee in the pitch, to administer planning law without fear or favour, seems to be compromised to some extent, and they are not representing, as far as we can tell, the interests of the people they're meant to serve, the people of Ardersier.
Okay, thank you for that. Well, let's bring in Abby Reardon here, because she's the local lady who's really leading the reaction by the local community. Abby, thank you very much for joining us. You've had to wait patiently there. Let's bring you in.
Hi. Well, for myself, this started in May last year when I received a letter through the door saying that Scottish Water were going to be doing this with the wastewater treatment works, and that they needed this for the planned developments going on around the area. The main reason they said they were going to do it was to protect the bottlenose dolphins and improve water quality. So straight away, it almost seemed like they were trying to sugarcoat something, because there's nothing wrong with our water quality. So in June, after writing to our MPs and MSPs, something I've never done in my life before, we were Scottish Water held some information days. We've got a very small village and we've got a very small hall, and 15 Scottish Water employees turned up to these information days to answer our questions. So rather than answering our questions, there was three to a table, and every time you answered a question, they would say, oh no, you have to go ask that question at the other table, we can't quite help you out with that one. And it was like a merry-go-round ask one person, send you somewhere else. And we did not get any answers. In fact, we had more questions. So many of the community have now come together, and we've been asking questions and, you know, looking into reports as to why this is actually coming here. And the more we read, the more concern that we have that this, you know, this whole process hasn't been done properly. We've been looking over, for instance, the Mott MacDonald stakeholder workshop, especially Appendix D, where Addisea was rescored from being the lowest in terms of preferences for the wastewater treatment works to go to the highest. And that's just how it's kind of developed, you know. The community has been left with no voice because some of the MPs and MSPs that we have were actually involved in the actual decision-making process. So it's been an incredibly frustrating kind of couple of months for us. But we are making progress. Despite objections, the conditions were actually passed by the Highland Council. Scottish Water have been allowed to start work, and we've still got a lot of unanswered questions. Things with the traffic management plan, various conditions that have been passed, and we're just not getting any answers.
Right, Abby, can I just ask you, you talk about going and asking questions of that Scottish Water team. Were you on your own at this stage, or had the community already started to sort of get together to tackle this as a community?
The community had already started to mobilise. So we'd already started asking questions as a community. In fact, outside the actual information day back in June, we had our own little stall, you know, so that we, as people were going in, you know, people were asking questions and coming out and giving us the information that they'd been given. So then when other people were going in and coming out and getting different answers, it was like, well, this isn't really adding up. You know, we can't get a straightforward answer to a question. And if anybody pressed them, you know, I mean, one gentleman was, you know, very much offended at what he'd been called by a Scottish Water employee because he dared to kind of question his answer, you know. So and we're still really in the same kind of boat in terms of asking questions of the Highland Council and Scottish Water. You write to them, you know, you've got everything set out and you literally get passed from one person to another. And actually as early as this week, I had a conversation with a Scottish Water employee who I was questioning something. He said, you're not an expert. You know, he says, don't question anything because you're not an expert. And that just makes you even more angry, and it makes you want to go find the answers even more.
And you've now got to the point where you've started to have success by the fact that clearly you and other people have done their research, and perhaps you're not experts when you start, but by the time you've done that research, you are probably well qualified. Can you give us some idea of what has happened? The balance of power seems to have changed from just local people being told really what's going to happen. You've now got to a better position where I think that the local authority and Scottish Water are having to pay attention to the community.
Yeah, a wee bit. I mean, on Tuesday, the Scottish Water actually clearing a section of the pipeline, where the pipeline was going. And it's actually in between where two landowners have blocked their access. So on either side of this pipeline, both landowners have refused access for them to dig and put this pipeline. So really, you know, if they can't get the pipeline in, they've got a problem. However, I think they're trying to put as much pressure. I mean, they're working on three different areas in Addisea just now. And I think it's really just like an attack, you know, trying to get as much as the pipeline done as possible so they can put as much pressure on, you know, landowners and homeowners and to get them to say yes to putting this pipeline on their land.
Right. Do you, Abby, do you think you've now got to a point where, well, where have you got? Is it on hold now? Are they trying to push it ahead?
They're very much trying to push ahead. But that does that by no means that we're done. We are very much fighting, and we fight every day. We hold peaceful protests. We're constantly writing letters, researching. We will not let this go ahead. And we will fight because it's wrong, you know, and that is the right thing to do. Despite, you know, everybody saying it's a done deal, there is no such thing as a done deal. No done deal here in Abyssinia.
Okay, well, thank you very much for taking us through that.
I just wanted to ask, Abby, you said something about bottlenose dolphins earlier. Just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so they're saying that they want to improve the water quality for the bottlenose dolphins. So they're actually putting a UV light out there. Now, that sounds really good. If it was for the population equivalent that they're talking about putting out there, which is 8831, but they actually want to take the population equivalent of wastewater out there to 58,000 population equivalent. So, you know, yeah, it sounds really good, but actually they only need to improve the water quality because of, you know, they need to stick far more out there than what's going out there just now.
I see.
Okay. I'm going to say, Abby, if you would like to come on with us again, I'd like to talk more on this subject because it takes in some fascinating areas about how these plans for the new development, how they originate. And I can tell you that in the very early days, I did work on some of that aspect down here in Devon. And it was fascinating to see statistics that the government's actuaries were producing were then manipulated, and I'm going to say falsified, in order for the government to get some of its sort of new town plans into existence. And we could then bring in the planning inspectors, of course, who ultimately make a decision, but work for the government anyway. Mm. We haven't got time today, but I'd like to give you an invite to come back and we can talk some more.
We will do that. That sounds really good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for joining us.
Okay. Well, Europol has issued its serious and organized crime threat assessment for 2017. So the main bullet points that they chose to highlight from this report are that more than 5,000 international organized crime groups within the more than 180 nationalities are currently under investigation in the EU. The number of organised crime groups that are involved in more than one criminal activity has increased sharply over the last years. For almost all types of organised crime, criminals are deploying and adapting technology with ever greater skill. Cryptoware, ransomware using encryption has become the leading malware in terms of threat and impact, but document fraud has emerged as a key criminal activity, and document fraud, money laundering and online trade in illicit goods and services are the engines of organised crime. But as you dig on down through this document, probably about three quarters of the way through it then, we find migrant smuggling has emerged as a highly profitable and widespread criminal activity for organised crimes in the EU. The migrant smuggling business is now a large, profitable and sophisticated criminal market comparable to the European drugs market, but that's not important enough to put on the front page on the sort of bullet points. We don't worry about that quite so much.
We go for the cyber first.
Cyber first. That's because
and this is the same cyber where they say they have billions of pounds worth of spying agencies and equipment, but they can't track down the people who are smuggling the children anyway.
Absolutely. And they also say that the number of unaccompanied minors present in the UK has increased significantly in recent years as a result of the migration crisis. This group is highly vulnerable to all types of exploitation. And let's just remember once again that, of course, our old friend Tim Farron has still not done anything about this issue, despite calling for more and more unaccompanied minors to come to Britain. And the fact that that unaccompanied minors that have come to Britain are disappearing in Britain and undoubtedly being trafficked. And he has acknowledged that they're undoubtedly being trafficked and sexually exploited. So Tim Farron has some questions to answer. Europol has some questions to answer because they don't consider it important enough to put to make a priority item.
And the policing minister, Brandon Lewis, also has some questions to answer, because, of course, he still hasn't replied to the information that came out of the Met police whistleblower that we featured. So a wall of silence when you ask them about it. But the document tries to use people smuggling in order to get the cyber security in place.
Absolutely. And right, we're running out of time, so we'll briefly run through this. The US sending 2,500 troops to Kuwait, ready to step up its fight in Syria and Iraq, apparently. The RT, I think, was reporting yesterday that US troops have already been spotted in an armored convoy in Syria. US soldiers spotted traveling near the Syrian city of Manbij, and a US spokesman calling it a deliberate action. And so another 2,500 troops heading over. This looks like a major escalation of whatever the US is up to. They are, of course, Vanessa Bailey, I was speaking to earlier today, saying that there's a race on at the moment to get to Raqqa. The US is dying to set up an airbase inside of Syria, and Raqqa is a likely choice for that. So
that's a really incredible statement, Mike, isn't it? That you've got a nation state. Syria is still a nation state, and the Americans casually say, "Well, actually, we want to get our troops in and set up an airbase."
Absolutely, and of course, the key point is they have not been invited, unlike the Russians.
Indeed.
So it is an invasion, and somebody in the chat box is saying, Trump and Obama, their policies, at least with regard to foreign policy, don't seem so different.
Well, this is going to be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Last from me then, Rotherham abuse scandal probe implicates 91 police officers. So more than 90 current and former South Yorkshire police officers are now part of an investigation over the Rotherham child sexual exploitation scandal, with some potentially facing criminal charges. This is statistics coming from the IPCC, the Independent Police Complaints Commission, and their probe into this is ongoing. Of course, if you want to get some of the background to this, get onto the UK Column website and look for an article called The Rotherham Common Purpose Effect. And in that, we're highlighting the J Report, 159 pages, which was the independent inquiry into child sexual exploitation in Rotherham. That's from 1997 to 2013. And they were saying that their conservative estimate was 1,400 children sexually exploited in that period. Multiple perpetrators, they were saying that the police give no priority to child sexual exploitation, and if this issue of 91 officers implicated, that probably gives some indication as to why. And of course, if we look at some of the people involved, David Compton, Chief Constable, he was a Common Purpose graduate. We've got Robert Dyson, who was a temporary Chief Constable prior to the appointment of David Compton. He's also Common Purpose. And Martin Kimber, the Chief Executive of Rotherham Borough Council, also Common Purpose. So this all happened on the watch of some pretty senior Common Purpose graduates, and perhaps we shouldn't be surprised.
I don't think we should be surprised at all, because, of course, it's been revealed that Common Purpose has been putting people into schools to train youngsters in the early days from the age of 11 to 14 with no CRB checks. That's an open secret. Any other company or individual would have been questioned as a minimum on this, if not charged, because it is an offence, but not Common Purpose, because, of course, it's a favourite government political charity. Mm. We're going to end on some more good news on this very topic, because a parent decided they were going to challenge a school that was saying your children need to be educated in what to eat and how to eat it by the government, without bothering to tell the parents this was going on. And this is part of an email that was sent into the school saying, we're not very happy with what is going on, and we suggest that you have a look at our concerns, and we suggest you have a look at the UK column. Yeah. So it takes some courage to do this. I'm going to say thank you very much to the individuals concerned. David, we never have enough time now to get through the topics for the news. Just some closing words from you, if you would like.
Well, just to go back to Ardisia there, what I've seen since we've started is huge arrogance by people from Scottish Water, Scottish Water officials, saying to landowners, saying to homeowners that they have stolen land from the Crown. Complete nonsense. You know, these people have title deeds. These people have completely clear legal claim to land. And Scottish Water just want to say, no, 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 we have the right to do this. And they're not interested in treating people as equals. And what we've seen in Ardersier is people learning how to act together to encourage one another and to start to insist that the officials realise that we're all equal under the common law jurisdiction. And if the people are to see remember that, then Scottish Water and Highland Council have to remember it too.
Excellent. Well, that's the end of today's news. Thank you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us. If you're not a subscriber of UK Column, please subscribe, because we can only do what we do with your help. I say that because it's true. We will be back same time on Monday, 1 o'clock. Join us then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.